Thanks to land trusts, there are, I think, over 280,000 acres of protected land in Wisconsin. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. We'll be talking about land trusts now, what they are, how they work, what their purpose is, with our guests in the studio with me. Stephanie Vrabeck is the chair of the board of directors of the Northeast Wisconsin Land Trust. Stephanie, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
And Mike Carlson is executive director of Gathering Waters, which is Wisconsin Alliance for Land Trusts. We'll be talking about the trusts and certainly hoping to hear from you. What are your experiences with land trusts? Maybe have questions about them. I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. And Mike, again, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Larry. Great to be here.
Tell us about Gathering Waters, just to begin.
Sure. Yeah. So Gathering Waters, we're Wisconsin's Alliance for Land Trusts, and we're really the statewide association for the 50 land trusts across Wisconsin. We were founded in 1994, mm-hmm. and we really exist for, we do a couple of primary things. One is we do public policy advocacy for land conservation across Wisconsin and supporting the Wisconsin Land Trust. We also do training and direct technical assistance to make sure that the 50 land trust organizations around the state are sustainable, well-run organizations and that they can be doing their work effectively on the ground.
And if we, you know, I think we're probably good to define what a land trust is so we all are on the same page here.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we talk about land trusts today or land conservancies, what we really mean are they're actually nonprofit charitable organizations with a primary part of their mission is to permanently protect land. So that could either be by owning land, like nature preserves, or by protecting land through something called a conservation easement, which we can talk about mm-hmm. more later on the show. But so when we talk about land trust today, we're really talking about those nonprofit organizations, again, about 50 around the state that with a primary mission of protecting land in perpetuity.
And the preservation of these, before we get to Stephanie here, are they preserved left as is? What are the different ways that land is preserved?
Sure. So land trusts across Wisconsin really protect land for a range of different reasons. It could be for preserving sensitive natural areas. It could be for protecting farmland. It could be for water resources, recreational lands like trails and parks, and also cultural resources. So, you know, a number of different goals that benefit, you know, the public interest. But again, primarily land trusts are either owning land outright in the form of kind of preserves, nature preserves, or permanently protecting land through conservation easements. Those are kind of the two primary ways that land trusts work.
Yeah. And Stephanie, you're on the board of the Northeast Wisconsin Land Trust. Tell us about your organization.
Well, we are one of the largest land trusts in the state of Wisconsin. We serve 12 counties. We were founded as a watershed protection organization. So our goals have expanded since then. We serve to protect all lands in Northeast Wisconsin, if possible. But we are founded as a watershed protection organization because 75% of the watershed of Green Bay flows through the Fox and Wolf rivers of Northeast mm-hmm. Wisconsin. Our service area is broad, bigger than most land trusts. But we have a mission to focus on protecting the waters that protect Green Bay and Lake Michigan. The shorelands of Green Bay are very important to us, as is the Fox River Valley.
And you just won the Land Trust of the Year award from Mike's organization, Gathering Waters. What does that mean for your trust?
Well, we're thrilled with that important, prestigious designation for this year. This is our 20th year. So we have protected over 5,000 acres of land. We have 50 privately held preserves. We have 8 public preserves. And so to be recognized for the work that we've done over the last 20 years is quite an honor, and especially coming through our state agency, Gathering Waters, we're just thrilled with that award and that designation.
Why are they, let's talk about why they're important. Why are land trusts important? And either one of you could answer that certainly. Mike, do you want to start?
Sure, yeah, happy to. I think probably when a lot of your listeners think about land protection, they often maybe will think about government agencies, which play a very important role. So like the DNR protecting state parks or wildlife areas or the national forests. They might think about county parks, like we've got such a great county park program here in Dane County and many counties around the state. But land trusts really play kind of a – they're sort of the private public-private partnership side of land conservation. Land trusts provide options for landowners who want to permanently protect their land. If landowners really find their land to be very special and want their land permanently protected, land trusts play an important role partnering with local communities. So land trusts will often partner with counties, townships, cities in helping to protect green space, open space, and outdoor recreation opportunities, you know, close to where people live. And then land trusts also partner often with state and federal agencies like the DNR. You know, if there's a place where maybe the DNR can't do a certain bit of land protection, a land trust often can step in and be that kind of private partner to help get that work done. So I think all of these different groups and agencies play an important role when you think about the public lands in Wisconsin and our kind of long legacy of land conservation in Wisconsin. All of these different agencies play important roles. Land trusts, again, kind of come in with that public-private partnership and really, you know, are important partners for all of those groups doing that important work.
This day and age, I think there's always a focus on money and the economy and what's the impact and what is there an economic impact with land trusts?
Absolutely. I think, again, the fact that land trusts are protecting land for a number of reasons, whether it's, you know, high value natural areas or for trails, for public recreation, oftentimes to protect forestry resources. Oftentimes, these have direct economic impact. I think a couple of stats to mention. One is that you think about the impact of outdoor recreation here in Wisconsin. It's a, you know, a $12 billion a year industry. Our forest products industry is a $19 billion a year industry. You know, these are industries that rely on protected land, on wildlife habitat, on public access, on access to forest products. And so, you know, very often these land protection efforts have a direct economic impact.
Yeah. Stephanie, could you talk about some of the, or maybe give us an example of a property or an area that you've worked in so people have kind of an idea?
Sure. In fact, I was going to weigh in on this partnership idea with the DNR. We have been effective in helping landowners preserve their land. We've also been very effective in helping to maybe acquire, purchase lands, and then we've donated them back to the DNR so that they could be managed in as part of their state natural areas program. So this partnership process is really important for the private landowner as well as for acquiring properties that could have public access through the state DNR lands. So that's one of the examples we've worked in Northeast Wisconsin in that regard. Right now we have a very important project underway in an in particular important area called the Red Banks Alvar, where we are working hard to acquire lands adjacent to existing DNR lands, because, you know, as the landscape serves the ecology in a region, the bigger the chunk of land, let's say, the better. I mean, it's you want to have as many parcels as you can, but if you can connect those parcels together, they serve a much more important ecological purpose there. So we're working hard to expand some of what DNR has already acquired and done in certain regions that are particularly important. The Elvar is a really unique region because it sits right on the Niagara Escarpment. Okay. So it it has particularly important ecological value for the state of Wisconsin.
What? How does a land trust become a land trust?
Sure. So as I mentioned, land trusts are nonprofit organizations, and so a group of residents would come together and decide, you know, they wanted to form a nonprofit charity for the purposes of protecting land. Just a little bit of history and context here in Wisconsin. So when we were formed when Gathering Waters was formed in 1994, there were actually 12 land trusts working across the state. And today that's really grown to about 50 land trusts, organizations working across Wisconsin. They range in size. You know, the Wisconsin chapter of the Nature Conservancy is a member of ours. They're, you know, one of the largest nonprofit organizations working in conservation organizations working in Wisconsin. You know, all the way down to about half of our members are actually all volunteer boards of directors without staff, but doing very important work on the ground. So we actually, you know, through that evolution of the land trust community in Wisconsin from 12 up to 50. We really, today, if landowners are interested in protecting their land or local communities are interested in working with a land trust, we really urge folks to actually contact existing land trusts across the state, because with those 50, I would say almost every community in the state has a land trust with a service area in their area. And so on our website, gatheringwaters.org, we've actually got a list of all of our land trust members and a map kind of showing where their service areas are. But, you know, I think we've seen a tremendous growth in the community, and now it's, from our perspective, a matter of sustaining those 50 land trusts that we have across the state.
Talking today with Stephanie Vrabeck, who chairs the board of directors of the Northeast Wisconsin Land Trust, and Mike Carlson, executive director of Gathering Waters, Wisconsin's Alliance for Land Trusts. And they're going to be with us right up till 12:30 today. Maybe you're involved in one, or maybe you have a question. I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. We'll take a quick look at the news and weather, and then we'll be back with our guests. You stay with us. Happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, talking today about the benefits of land trusts with our guests. Mike Carlson, Executive Director of Gathering Waters, which is Wisconsin's Alliance for Land Trust, and Stephanie Vrabeck, who chairs the Board of Directors of the Northeast Wisconsin Land Trust. You may have I'm pretty sure you have a land trust in your area. Maybe you're involved in it. Has it been a good thing in your area? What questions do you have? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Let's turn to Darla first in Madison. Darla, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me. And thanks for the good work you all are doing. I'm just calling in because I happened across a video, I think, by Gathering Waters. My grandma is interested in protecting her land in Iron County, and so I was kind of doing a little research to try and help her out with figuring out what to do, and I happened across this video, and I just thought it was really well done, and it really helped me get a better idea of the kind of things that land trusts do. And so that's really why I'm just calling in to say great job, and I think my grandma has actually been in touch with, I think it's Norris Woods Land Trust.
Yeah.
To try and help her figure out what her options might be to protect her land.
Well, Darla, I really appreciate that feedback. Thank you very much. We're proud of the video as well. It is on our website at gatheringwaters.org. And I think I'll just briefly mention the video really highlights three examples of land trusts and the kind of work they do around the state that I thought would be worth just briefly mentioning. So it highlights three of our land trust members around the state. One is the River Revitalization Foundation, which is Milwaukee's Urban Rivers Land Trust, and really shows how just protecting, you know, 1 acre at a time, a few acres at a time of green space along the Milwaukee River is providing this incredible opportunity for public access for folks in the city, getting kids out into the outdoors, and it's just a really neat example. Another one is the Driftless Area Land Conservancy, and the example is a project that they worked on in the village of Argyle down in Lafayette County, where they protected a parcel of land immediately adjacent to the Argyle High School, and they're working with the high school to develop an outdoor laboratory and access for students to get outdoors there in a you know rural community in southwest Wisconsin. The third example is actually in far northwest Wisconsin, one of our members, the Conservation Fund, which is actually a national nonprofit land trust, they actually worked on what was called a working forest conservation easement and protected 67,000 acres of working forest land in Douglas County, the former Wausau Paperlands, that will now permanently be in sustainable forest production in perpetuity. So it kind of gives a flavor of, you know, you've got urban Milwaukee, you've got rural southwest Wisconsin, you've got important forest lands in northwest Wisconsin, quite a mix of groups working around the state.
And that's on your website, gatheringwaters.org.
Yep.
O-R-G. I think we have a link on our Facebook page, too, at the Larry Mueller Show, if you forget that and want to refer back to it. Darla, thank you so much for that call. I appreciate it very much. I want to give Joan in Watertown a chance to join us as well. Joan, thank you for calling.
Thank you. I appreciate the work that you're all doing as well. And my concern has been for years now for the sustainable growers, vegetable and fruit growers in all over the country, really. But in Wisconsin, we're seeing more and more of the land being taken up by the corn and soy growers, the genetic modification and so forth, and not really taking good sustainable care of the soil. And so I'm wondering whether, well, for one thing, whether some of these massive acreages of land that's being used to grow genetic modified foods could be or is ever, you know, put into land trust, and if that land could be somehow, maybe there could be an arm of the land trust organization that would be available as a sort of a link between young growers who want to farm sustainably but can't afford the land.
Yeah. Well Stephanie, go ahead with that.
You know, that's a complex issue you're bringing up relating to, you know, large-scale farming. And again, just to remind everyone that what land trust work involves is usually helping the private landowner put their land into conservation, or occasionally an organization will hold lands for public access. They'll actually purchase properties. But to get back to your question, I think the key word here is sustainability. And if a private landowner wants to put acreage into a conservation easement, the parameters of protecting that land could definitely include sustainable farming in the terms that you've described for fruit and vegetable growers, maybe related to organic use or whatever those that definition may be. Of course, we all, you know, understand that sustainable farming is, you know, sound ecological practice, and that is one of the main things that we strive for in conservation of land, is to make sure that those qualities of sustainable land use are protected for the future. So, you know, without trying to, you know, say that yes, this is something we do, and getting into farming protection, we certainly share the same value of sustainable land use, and protecting the soil is one of the main things that is so important about conservation of land. So I think that you know, there are opportunities, especially if you should find a private landowner that would want to put their land in conservation, but then at the same time protect the kinds of uses you're talking about.
Yeah. Or those that are already existing, I would guess, too, Mike.
Yeah, there are several of our land trust members around the state that are doing farmland protection. I think a great example of that is just here in Dane County, the Natural Heritage Land Trust partners with the town of Dunn to do quite a bit of farmland protection in the town of Dunn. I think, you know, when you get to the question about specific practices on farmland, it can get a little tricky with, you know, a permanent conservation easement to sort of imagine what farming might look like, you know, 10, 20, 50 years from now. But like Stephanie said, it certainly can be part of the conversation between the land trust and a landowner that's interested in that kind of arrangement. Mm-hmm.
Joan, thank you so much for calling. I want to give Mike in Castle Rock a chance to join in. Mike, hello. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I've got 1.8 acres behind my property here. It's right next to the DNR, and it's on Castle Rock Creek. Now, a couple of years ago, or maybe longer, there's a Mississippi branch of land restoration that I was trying to deal with, and they're really not interested in small tracts of land. Mm-hmm. Is that true?
Sure, yeah. You were probably talking to the Mississippi Valley Conservancy. They're headquartered out of La Crosse, and they're a great organization. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, it is important for, Larry, for your listeners to consider, you know, these, again, land trusts are, you know, nonprofit organizations with boards of directors, and they really do rely on donation, you know, private donations to support their staff and to support their operations. So they really, I think, have to also be very strategic and thoughtful about which projects they can and can't take on, because, you know, they're going to have a perpetual obligation once they do a conservation easement or once they purchase a piece of land. So it is, you know, incumbent upon these land trusts to really be very thoughtful about where they're doing projects. I would say to landowners that I think it's always worth kind of keeping an open line of dialogue with and continuing a conversation with land trusts over time. A project maybe doesn't fit at one given point in time, but maybe it could in the future. So there's really no harm in kind of continuing that conversation over time to see if at some point, you know, a parcel of land would really fit into a land trust priorities.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to add that in the sort of step-by-step process of establishing a conservation easement on your land, the first step is to recognize what is the public benefit of the ecological value of that land, or for that matter, the ecological, historical, cultural value of that land. And so you can imagine a small parcel may not meet that requirement of serving the public good because of those ecological values. And this gets back to why land trust work is so important. It is to serve the public good. We help landowners put their land into conservation easement, but they also get tax benefits. And so there's very strict rules from the Internal Revenue Service on how those lands are defined so that they serve the public. And size isn't always the most important thing, but often that could be a factor.
Yeah. There we go. Thanks, Mike, for calling. So keep that line of communication open. And Troy in Crandon has something for us. Troy, hello. Thank you for calling.
Yes, hi. My question is pretty relevant to what your guest just said. My girlfriend's family has a parcel of land in a trust, and I'm not sure which trust it's through, but I know that they part of that is they allow public hunting and things like that. And so I was wondering what kind of restrictions are on there or where I would find that out. For things that I might be able to do as far as prairie restoration or putting in a food plot for deer hunting. So, yeah, what kind of
where are the rules
are on?
Yeah, for sure.
Sure. So again, there's a couple of ways that land trusts protect land. One is to, you know, buy land outright and actually hold it as a nature preserve, and another is to acquire a conservation easement. So a landowner might either sell or donate a conservation easement to the land trust. I would say more often than not, if the land's protected by a conservation easement, more often than not, public access is not included as part of that transaction. So with conservation easements, more often than not, there's not public access, and the rules are really defined by what's actually written in the conservation easement. So if it's a conservation easement, you'd want to go back and sort of read what actually is outlined in the easement in terms of what is allowed on the property or not. If the property's been, let's say, purchased by a land trust and the land trust used public funding, let's say, to purchase that land. So we have our state's Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Program that provides grant funding to land trusts to protect land. If a land trust is using that public source of funding that requires public access, then, you know, then public access for things like hunting, fishing, cross-country skiing, hiking would typically be allowed. So it kind of depends on how the land was protected in the first place in terms of whether or not there's public access or what the restrictions actually are on it.
Yeah, so if Troy's girlfriend's family can't lay their hands on a copy of that, which might be the case, I sometimes look around my own house for various things and can't find them. Can they go back to the land trust and get the copy?
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, so that'd be available.
Yep. And that kind of brings up a topic I wanted to make sure we touched on, and that is that each land trust in our state, over 50 of them, has an obligation of stewarding those lands forever. And so land trust work is for for all time, in perpetuity. And so they have to keep meticulous records that are, I know they're held in multiple copies in multiple places to make sure that those documents are available for future landowners, for government, you know, that may have an interest in finding out about that land. So, you know, it's a long-term commitment, and it's a... And that takes us back to, you know, thinking about the work of land trust. The stewardshipping process is a very costly, time-consuming part of the work we do. But it's so important because we are really one of the only organizations that protects land forever.
Yeah, that's forever. It's a long time.
It's a long time
for sure. Troy, thanks again for calling. I appreciate it. Let's go to Tom next. Tom, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry and guests. My wife and I have two separate pieces of property in the Vernon County area, the Cooley region, and they're really a little bit different. We have 150 acres of ridge land, which is about half farmland. The rest is wooded. The other farm is about a quarter of a mile away. It's valley land, and we have a stream running through it. We have worked with the Mississippi Valley Conservancy over the last year to put the ridge property into a conservancy agreement. And I want to explain a little bit about how easy that was, because it really was easy. I can't speak highly enough about the people at Mississippi Valley. They're very cooperative, they're very helpful, and they're fun to work with. It took about 9 months. Last year, about this time, we contacted Mississippi Valley, and they came out and drove with us and walked with us through that ridge property to determine if it was something that they were interested in. We have children, but children have not lived with us here in Wisconsin. We bought the property in 1971. The kids never lived here, so they are not interested in maintaining the property and living here. That was a major concern, and we made sure that this was all right with the kids, because it does affect land value a little bit. And they were perfectly happy with what we were doing. So about a year ago, we drove the land. They took it back to the board. The lady that was with us took it back to the board. The board was interested. So at that point, they asked me to come up with a list of constrictions or restrictions that we would like to have. And basically, we had free range on that. We wrote up a document with what we wanted to have done, what we didn't want to have done. We didn't want to have it subdivided, for example, and McMansions built on it. We wanted a limited footprint. We are organic farmers, and we wanted to continue good conservation farming. We did not specify that it must be kept in organic farming. So after we had done that, they took it, and they actually wrote the agreement. Now, there was a lot of boilerplate terminology in there for legal reasons that had been discussed. But we signed an agreement in June, so it took us roughly 9 months. It was just, I think it was one of the easiest legal procedures I have ever gone through. And to do it in 9 months, we were very pleased. The land on the ridge is a lot different than our valley land. They are also interested in our valley land, and we are going to put it in the conservation easement as well. It has some bluff property. We've discovered lots of native prairie species on top of that bluff. So they're interested in that. And again, want to share that the response of my neighbors has been very, very enthusiastic. They like what we've done. They like to see that it's going to be preserved and not developed. And so we really consider it a win-win. And again, I can't stress how easy we felt that it was.
Well, Tom, thanks so much for calling. Mike, a comment?
I just really appreciate that testimonial, Tom. I think that's such a great example. I think it's a great example of a landowner that really wanted to see their land protected in the future. It's a great example of really starting that kind of line of communication and dialogue with their local land trusts. And yeah, I think it's a very much a collaborative process and trying to kind of meet the goals of the land trust, but also meet the goals of the landowner. So I really appreciate that call, Tom.
Thank you so much, Tom, for calling. Appreciate it. Helen in Big Bend has a question that may be on some people's mind as well.
Some of the issues have maybe been covered a little bit, but The Land Conservancy groups are local. They're an enthusiastic group of people who want to preserve things. When those people die off or nobody's interested in replacing them, what happens to that trust? And if there's not monies or people showing up to take care of the invasives that come in, who has jurisdiction over that to make sure that that happens? Because I don't know that it always does unless it's been funded by the donor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about an individual who donated their property.
Okay.
Yeah, I appreciate that question, Helen. That's actually really one of the real core reasons that we were founded back in the mid-90s was to make sure that there was a statewide organization that could support these local land trusts and to make sure that they were sustainable organizations. I think if you think about the nonprofit sector in general and sort of the long-range responsibilities that nonprofits have, land trusts are pretty unique, I think, in having those perpetual obligations. So that's a big responsibility that we have to help support local land trusts to make sure that they are around forever. But many land trusts will actually list backup holders in their conservation easements to ensure that if some unfortunate occurrence would happen in the future, that there would be someone, another organization that could uphold those responsibilities in the future.
Yeah.
And could I just add,
Stephanie,
the perspective of the Northeast Wisconsin Land Trust, we take this responsibility extremely seriously. And so we have worked hard to establish endowment funds for the long-term perpetual oversight stewardship of our lands. So there are funds that rest with three different community foundations that we have access to annually to make sure that we can do the work we need to do to protect those lands, to prevent invasive species from, becoming a problem, as you've suggested, Helen. So I don't know what all land trusts do, but I know that in the Northeast Wisconsin Land Trust region, we are working with our community foundations to make sure there's endowment funds, and we'll be striving in the future to build those endowment funds for that very purpose.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling. And Roy, in Appleton, have you got a quick comment?
Quick comment. I'm a volunteer for the Northeast Wisconsin Land Trust, and I think one of the keys with our land trust is that every year we monitor and send our volunteers out to monitor that property so that that land trust, whatever is in that document, is performed, is being done. The beauty of that is I get the chance to talk to the landowners, go visit with them on their land, and it means a lot to them to know that we are following their desires for the future. And I think that I've been in prairies and forest land and swampland in the sense of preserving the west shore of Green Bay. And we volunteers have a great stake in land trusts and preserving the intentions of the donors.
Yeah.
Roy, thank you so much for calling in. I just want to thank you for just articulating how important our volunteer base is in this work. And we welcome more volunteers to engage with us in this incredible work. And it's so rewarding, as Roy has pointed out.
I should also mention, it relates to the last caller's question as well, that we have there's a national organization called the Land Trust Alliance, which is a great partner of ours here in Wisconsin, but they work nationally, and they've developed what's called Land Trust Standards and Practices, which really lay out the best practices that land trusts should follow to ensure that they're upholding their responsibilities and compete sustainable organizations in the future. A big, really important part of those standards and practices is that annual monitoring and making sure that every year there's contact.
Yeah. Here we are out of time, and I you guys have websites, and we will we have them up on our Facebook page. Mike and Stephanie, thank you so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Larry.
Thank you.
And Mike Carlson, Executive Director of Gathering Waters. You can go to their site. It's Wisconsin's Alliance for Land Trust. Stephanie Vrabeck, you can go to their site as well. She chairs the Board of Directors of the Northeast Wisconsin Land Trust. Thanks for listening. Stay with us.